Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. Just for anybody who is sort of new, when we are asked to bow to the Buddha, and we bow in this direction, to this beautiful castered sculpture of a representation of the Buddha. We have no idea how the Buddha really looked, do we? So this is a representation, and it allows us as human beings to express feelings. One of the things that we have a feeling for is that the reason we are here today, able to practice meditation, practice mindfulness, hear the teachings of the Dharma that help to bring liberation and open-heartedness to our lives, is because this is a tradition that began with a historical person called the Buddha, and is only here today because it has been preserved, because it has been taught, because it has been lived by many generations for thousands of years, over 2,600 years. And a bow is just respect, an acknowledgement that we are here because of others. I usually think we're here just because of ourselves. Wherever we are, we think it's all because of us, me, that I've been able to do what I've done in my life. But that is a very narrow view. We are only here today because of many others. Many others. Because we are here in this sacred Dharma place, we acknowledge this living tradition going back to the Buddha, the historical Buddha. But we are also reminded in that bow to remember that that historical person and all the historical people who have awakened to their true nature, who have liberated themselves from their sufferings through the practice of the Buddha Dharma, that they could only do that because everyone already has this innate true nature. Buddha nature, undefiled nature, awakened nature. It is not something that has to be manufactured. It is not having that has to be. We have to create. It is simply something we have to uncover. It is our heritage. And so, since Buddha only means an awakened one, when we bow to the Buddha, hopefully we are remembering, no matter where we've wandered to in our capacity to create drama and melodrama in our life, we stop and we remember how fortunate we are to be the heirs to this great tradition that has the power to liberate us. And secondly, remember that it is only because we have this Buddha nature that we can awaken to, that awakening is always available to us. So all that is in that very quick bow. This morning I wanted to talk about a little bit something for those who've been coming a while. These last 3 or 4 months, you know, we have been involved in this practice period, this intensive practice period of looking more deeply into the fundamental teachings of Buddhism, not just as intellectual, conceptual, philosophical, psychological teachings, but are something that are very intrinsic to all human experience. And you know, you over these last 3 or 4 months, you've heard many talks. Those of you who have been in the intensive have been involved in them consistently, and those of you who attend on Sundays have gotten these various talks. In summary, we began by looking deeply into these teachings. Again, they're not Buddhist teachings. They're called Buddhist teachings, but they're really life teachings. The Buddha did not study Buddhism. He didn't study philosophy. He just looked deeply into life. And so his teachings were always about life, They were never theological in any the way we often understand it. So one of his first great discoveries was that which is called impermanence. Now many of us here, probably everybody here, would say, oh, I know that one. Right? Yeah, everything is impermanent, everything changes, nothing stays the same, blah, blah, blah. Right? That's not what it's about. Because if we really understood in our bones the teachings on impermanence, we would not be moved by the changes in life. We would understand them. But because we, no matter what we say, deeper down, we do want things to be permanent. That's the truth. But that's a very biased criteria, we might say. We only want the things we want to be permanent to be permanent. The things we don't want in life, we're quite happy that they're impermanent. So our understanding is very biased, which is why we suffer. Because when there are things we want to stay the same, whatever they are, a possession, a body, a relationship, the world, or whatever it is we want to stay the same, when we are faced with impermanence, that things, that they are changing, we suffer. We suffer what? Frustration, anger, resentment. We suffer sadness, despair. We suffer fear. We suffer lots of stuff. We suffer simply because we are unwilling to accept that everything is changing. Not only in the external world are things changing all the time, but our own thoughts, our own feelings, our emotions are also constantly in motion. As you have all experienced in the last hour, your mind just constantly changed, didn't it? Thoughts just came and go, feelings came and go. You were comfortable, you were uncomfortable. You liked meditation, you hated meditation. You know, you thought this is great, you thought this is a waste of time and boring. You know, I mean, what does that tell you? Hopefully that tells you something quite profound. So, first contemplation is impermanence. Everything changes, and to really get that deeply. As you watch your life, as you watch your experience, as you watch your own mind, you're always reminded, oh, yeah, everything's impermanent. Nothing is solid or stable. Everything is subject to change. The second great contemplation is what's called karma, cause and effect. We all know that one. Oh yeah, I get that one. No, we don't get that one. If we got it, again, we would be equanimous. We would be at ease with life. What cause and effect are telling us is, in this world of change, is it just a random universe that we're all just kind of the playthings of life? No. Things happen for a cause. Not just one cause, multiple causes. And if we want to understand in this impermanent world why life unfolds the way it does, we just need to look deeply into it. And we'll see the causes, right? For those of you who sat here this morning and were disappointed in your minds, you had perhaps wanted a different mind this morning. But if you look deeply into that, you would understand we all have the mind we had this morning because why? Because of causes and effects from the past. Right? All the causes from the past are now unfolding in our present moment. Right? That's why we have the mind we have. That's why we have the body we have. That's why we have the life we have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And everybody's in that too. Why is he the way he is? Because of causes and effects in his life, her life. Why is the situation unfolding the way it is because of causes and conditions. Look deeply, you will see it. Why is the world the way it is? Because of causes and conditions. When you understand causes and conditions, you're no longer angry, despairing, disappointed, frustrated, scared. You understand it cannot be in this moment any other way than it is. He or she cannot be any other way than they are. That's a deep understanding of cause and effect. It also means, because things are impermanent, because things are unfolding because of cause and effect, it also means wonderfully what? In this moment, I have the capacity of doing things differently. Because what I'm doing right now, thinking, acting, speaking, is a cause that will unfold, that in the future will be an effect. Can you see there'll be an effect from this? So if I want to change, all I need to do is what? No longer be driven by the causes and conditions of my past that are still arising. See them clearly, see them mindfully, right? Don't continue that pattern. And I have the freedom to do things differently now, which will create a different future for myself, whether it's myself or all of us together for the world. That's how it works. So causes and condition, karma is another, again, one of those things, they make songs about it, poems about it, people talk, it's my karma, and then they go on creating the same stuff they've been creating, as if karma is your fate. It's not your fate. Karma is not fate. Karma is simply acknowledging that things arise because of causes and conditions. And whatever the causes and conditions of our life has been in the past, we can change them in the present. But we'll talk in a moment about how to do that. The other big, the big one is understanding why we suffer. Right? That's a big one. And one, and in that fundamental contemplation, we look deeply into suffering. Suffering means unhappiness, dissatisfaction, frustration, the whole range of emotional afflictions, all the things which pass for normality in our life, but in Buddhism are called sufferings. We understand that we suffer because the world of phenomena, which means all the things we see and all the things we smell and all the things we taste and feel, and even our thoughts, mental phenomena, that they do not have the capacity of producing real happiness, real well-being, real peace of mind. And so therefore, no matter how many things we accumulate, no matter how many objectives we pursue, no matter how many goals we obtain, why is it that we are never happy, really? Other than when we get it, right? And whether we are happy when we get it because these things really give us happiness, or because we're happy because the desire and the pursuit is no longer driving us. Oh, some relief. Oh, I'm happy for a moment. I don't have to, I got what I pursued. I got what I thought I needed. And whether that is just reaching into the fridge because you think you need something, or buying something, or, you know, having some experience you think you gotta have, or to the bigger things. That is the defect of that pursuit of things, that grasping at things. It's called, what is the defects of this world? The defect of this world is it, by in and of itself, cannot give us happiness, other than on just short-term, momentary. And of course, the problem with wanting that kind of happiness in life, which is what all of us think we want, the problem with that, of course, is what? If we think there's a whole range of stuff that if we get will make us happy, then can you see we're stuck with the opposite? If we don't get it, we will what? Be unhappy. And we don't realize that we're the ones who set up that whole game. There are all these things that I want and need and must have to be happy. And they can be things, they can be a certain kind of body, they can be a certain kind of mind, there can be a certain kind of relationship, a certain kind of job, a certain kind of place to live, a certain kind of car to drive, right? A certain kind of food. I mean, we can go on and on, right? And we think, if I get all this, I will be happy. But then when we don't get it, we're not happy. And so we're always stuck, going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Everybody know what I'm talking about? That's called normal life. That passes for normal life. Again, that was considered a defect that we need to see. It's like a product that has a defect. No wonder it never works, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, there's a recall. And you go, oh, you know, oh, there was a defect in the product. You know, no wonder it never worked. Well, it's like that. We've come into this life with all the stuff that we see and think, and no one ever really taught us that it has one big defect. Okay? And then the fourth great contemplation is the preciousness of the freedoms and the opportunities that life really gives us. If we have been fortunate enough to not only have a human body, but to have a good mind that has the capability of understanding, if we are fortunate enough to have a body and a life that allows us freedom, that we are not just driven by survival, we are not living in situations where we're just scraping by to survive, to eat or to drink or to have, you know what I'm saying, which many people in this world are living. If we are fortunate enough to have a greater ease in our life, where we have opportunities such as the time to come and meditate, to hear Dharma teachings, to meditate in a group, at home to read and study, and that's great fortune for us. It's a great opportunity that life has given us. If we are not again driven by total material needs, or if our body is healthy enough that we're not you know, just racked by pain or have some kind of disease that really makes us unable to practice. So when we think about this, and if again the meditation goes on, if the teachings of liberation and freedom, and really which means how to live happily, you know, what life's really about, how to live a life of meaning and purpose and joy and compassion, if that's being taught still, if there are teachers who are living who show us the way. See, all these kinds of things, if they've all come together and someone says, you know, here you have a precious opportunity. This is the real meaning of life. If we don't see that, right, what they say is it's like a rich man who thinks he's poor. All this wealth and yet feels poor. All this capacity to use money to be of benefit, and yet you feel poor. Or when they say, in the midst of water, they cry out, I'm thirsty. Here we have such opportunities in this life, and yet we continue to pursue things that we know in our saner moments do not give us happiness or well-being. So this is important. So you put all this together and you turn toward what? Some kind of life that's meaningful and purposeful, and to find a way that teaches us and shows us and guides us in how to live that kind of life. It's available. We don't have an excuse anymore. Before we knew better, we had an excuse. But when we know better, we don't have an excuse. There is a better way of living. There is a better way of relating to each other. There is a better way of taking care of each other. Now, after that, we then spent, as you know, those who've been coming, we spent some time looking at what's called the five hindrances. Right? The five hindrances is like, oh, you know, we do those first four, and it's like, you know, opportunity for a great life here. What gets in the way? What hinders us? What holds us back? What obscures our eyes so we don't see clearly? And we go off in a million different directions. So these are called the five hindrances, and I believe there have been teachings over these past months on them. You know what they are. One is this, and these are mind states. These are not something indigenous to our mind. We didn't have these when we were babies. We didn't have these when we were 6 months or a year or two. Or, you know, these are things that developed over time and they covered our minds. So we couldn't see clearly. Because we couldn't see clearly, we lost our way. When we lost our way, we wander into all kinds of scenes in life, all kinds of adventures, all kinds of journey. That in our better mind, we might say, how did I get here? You know, why am I doing this again? Why is this happening again? Right? Well, why don't we see clearly? Well, it's these obscurations, these hindrances. You know, and they, quite simply, they're either like we're totally consumed with getting, wanting, desiring, grasping, needing, you know, like that's dominating our mind. And we all know that when that's dominating our mind, we are obsessive about that. We don't see anything else. So we're just so focused on getting and needing and wanting and must have and feeling deficient, feeling if I get this and if I get that. And people in this culture, we work so hard. We devote so much of our energy to all these activities, which at the end of the day do not produce happiness, well-being, meaning, right? And yet, because we are obscured, we don't see that. We just continue on. Okay? So if we're not doing that one, we're over the other side of that is what's called aversive or ill will. You know, if we're not wanting, needing, you know, really desiring, must have, we're what? We're disliking. We're resenting. We have ill will for people, for situations, for all kinds of things in life. So we're on the angry side, we're on the ill will side. Right? And our mind is just covered with don't like this one and don't like that one and don't like this situation and don't like this job and don't like this boss and don't like this body and don't, you know, ill will. People even have ill will for themselves, for their own life, for their own bodies, for their own minds. They have ill will. They have anger, they have resentment. Right? And again, when we're consumed with ill will and this kinds of negativity, again, we can't see clearly. Right? So there's those two. The other three are, one of them is kind of a, which might be called laziness, sloth, torpor, it's often called. It means it's an emotional state that's on the negative side. It's like depression, it's like boredom, it's like a heaviness of body and mind, it's like laziness, it's like there's no energy, there's no interest, there's no enthusiasm for life, right? We kind of go on that one. And again, when we're in that, you know, the clarity of life and the purpose of life is obscured. Oh, I'm too tired, right? I'm too tired. I don't have the energy. I'm to this or I'm to that. It's a kind of, if this is even, this is below that. It's, and in the tradition it's called sloth and torpor. Sloth means a kind of energyless in the mind. A torpor means a heavy, I mean in the body. And torpor means it's in the mind. And again, these are all obscurations. They can all be dealt with. The other side of this is that excitable mind. The mind that's always going, the mind that's always racing, the mind that's always stimulated, the mind that can never settle down, the mind that's always distracted, going here and there. So that's the other side. Okay. And the fifth one is doubt. Actually, when I was in Naples last week, I gave a talk on doubt. It's worthy of its own talk. But doubt is just these fundamental things that we just doubt ourselves. Oh, I can't do this. I'm unworthy. I'm less than. We doubt, let's say, you might be listening to a Dharma talk like today, hearing things about having your own true nature, your own capacity to awaken, your own, that there is such a thing as a meaningful, happy life, consistently that one can experience. And then there might be somebody inside going, that's not true. Or if it is true, I could never achieve that. You know what I mean? That's the mind of doubt. It's really a slayer of change and transformation. People just always doubting. Should I do this? Should I do that? You know that one? Days go by. Years go by. And we're going, did I? And even after we've made the, we go, I wonder if I made the wrong decision. I might have just, right? Back and forth. Worry, doubt. And again, when you're in that mind state, again, there's no clarity, there's no enthusiasm, it just pulls it. Okay? So those are the five hindrances. Are we clear? They hinder us. They hinder us. Remember when we did those first four contemplations, when we really got it about impermanence and cause and effect and the defects and the whole deal and the preciousness of life? Not when we do that, we're ready to go. Oh yeah, I'm ready for a meaningful life. And then the hindrances come up, right? And they don't just come up big like in meditation. They come up also just in our daily life. And we wonder why we can never get going. Where our quote-unquote spiritual life is like our ordinary life. It's just up and down and back and forth. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Right? And we wonder, why is my spiritual life like that? This is supposed to be different. Well, it actually could be different. But for it to be different, we have to be different. Right? We have to generate a different kind of enthusiasm, a different kind of purpose, a different kind of intention in our life. Or else it'll just keep on keeping on the way it always has. Are there any questions about this before I go into the factors of awakening? I mean, if you have any questions, if anything this doesn't sound right, or you disagree with, or you don't understand, again, I'm kind of going quickly because I know there have been talks on all this now for weeks. Good, so that means there's a basic acceptance of these way of looking at things. Again, this is not Buddhism. We have to give names to things. So when we go to the bookstore, we know which section to go to. But again, these are just teachings about life. The Buddha taught a way of leading an awakened life. He taught a way to end our suffering, our unhappiness. Okay? That's all he taught. He never taught Buddhism. He never studied Buddhism. He never taught Buddhism. This is just what it became called, the name given to it. Right? Like this, we call this flower a snap. Is it a snapdragon? We call this flower a snapdragon. But this doesn't call itself a snapdragon, does it? This is just this. It just knows itself as this. And it's quite content in that, isn't it? So, again, if we're going shopping, and somebody says, can you pick me up some snapdragons at the floral shop? It's good to know what they're called. And hopefully it's good to know if the florist knows what they're called. But that is not the same as, that's only a name. Right? This is the flower. This is the real thing. So in the same way, Buddhism is just a word for a body of teachings, philosophy, etc. But it's really just about life, about our life. So, beside the Buddha pointing out what I've just been talking about and in much more complexity than I have, he also postulated these seven factors, these aspects of an awakened mind. Okay. And again, when we talk about an awakened mind, that is in contradistinction to a what? A mind that is asleep. Right? When we are awake, we have the capacity to see what is here as it really is. Right? We've awakened from our thoughts about life. We've awakened from all our issues about life. We've awakened from all our emotional drama about life. We've awakened from all our conditioning, our stuff we bring from our past that we bring into life. We've awakened from our addictions and our obsessions and all this stuff. And we can see life just the way it is and live it in a noble way. And this is a nobility that is not the historical nobility that you had to be born to. This is a nobility that everyone is born to. It's that kind of nobility. It's just a nobility of a human being leading a noble life, which is everyone, no matter whether we're rich or poor, male or female. No matter what our condition of life is, all of us have that capacity, no matter what the situation of our life, to lead a noble life. So these seven factors of awakening are mindfulness, investigation, diligence or energy, joy, ease, concentration, and equanimity. So I'll spend a little time talking about these, but when we know what these are, and these are what we are cultivating in our practice, when we talk about practice, we are cultivating. See, many people talk about their practice, and they're just simply talking about their meditation practice. How's your practice going? You know, and they say, well, it's going well, or not going well, or I'm frustrated with it. But meditative practice is only one aspect of this path. This path is about awakening, and it's about generating these factors of awakening in our life, not just on the meditative cushion. So the first factor of awakening is mindfulness. Again, we call ourselves the Florida Community of Mindfulness, don't we? And we know mindfulness is out of the seven, it is the first one and the fundamental one. Okay? Because mindfulness means I am present to what is happening, whether it's what's happening when I look with my eyes, with my ears, with my mouth, inside the sensations of my body, or whether it's what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, whatever it is, I am clear about what's going on. Right? I'm not lost in a dream. I'm not lost in endless drama, believing the drama that my mind is projecting is real. What I'm thinking about that person is not that person. It's just my thoughts about that person. Whatever way I'm seeing a situation, and usually I'm seeing it through whose eyes? My eyes. And who's always right? Me. Now, if you have a world of 6 billion people and everybody thinks they're right, that they're correct, that they have the right view of things, what kind of world are you going to have? A mess. It cannot be other than a mess. And that's on a good day. because that mess can very quickly degenerate into anger, right? Conflict, hurting, violent, I mean, you know, all kinds of things, right? So, mindfulness, this capacity to be present, to just see what's going on in the present, to feel what's going on in the present, gives us the capacity of experiencing and dealing with things correctly. Right? Again, mindfulness to me is just the light is on. That's all it is. You know, if we came into this hall at night and it was pitch black, we wouldn't know what was here, and as we walked about, we would trip. We would stumble. We would walk into things. We might pick ourselves up and then trip again. We might be lucky and find ourselves walking down the aisle and go, oh, this is easy, right? Sometimes we're like that. Life is kind of, oh, this is pretty good, right? I haven't tripped in weeks. And then all of a sudden we turn a corner and we're flat on our face. And we go, gee, what happened? Well, again, it's dark. We're back in business? Good. So again, mindfulness is just turning on the light. If we don't stop and turn on the light, okay, if we just come in this room and we rush in, which is the way most of us live our life, we just rush into situations, we don't stop and turn on the light so we can clearly see what's there. When we clearly see what's there, we can walk about this room and not trip and not fall and not bang into walls. Is that clear? In the same way in life. So mindfulness is the first and most important, we could say. It is the entryway. So when we are, if we want to cultivate an awakened life, we have to cultivate mindfulness. The second is investigation. This means we're looking into life, right? We're investigating life. Phenomena means everything in Buddhism. The word is dharmas. It means we're investigating everything, right? Cause and effect. Why are things, why did this happen? You know, before I stumbled about in this room, now I turned on the light. Oh, now I can look around and investigate. Oh, that's over there, that's over there. You know, that's why you fall here, that's why you got to walk this way here. You know, why am I the way I am? I investigate. I look into cause and effect. I look into the past. I understand. Why am I getting angry? Why am I scared? Why am I... I investigate. Why is this person the way they are? This person that's giving me a hard time? Person I don't want to be? I investigate. I'm not just somebody who goes through life, you know, just responding to my own conditioning, right? My own projections, endlessly projecting onto life, my own stuff, and thinking that's the truth, right? I'm willing to stop. Again, mindfulness is stopping, turning on the light. Now I investigate phenomena. Again, this is a big subject, and I know I think it's being dealt with by other people, but I'm just trying to get you to see this is part of the path. If we're leading an awakened life, we are mindful, and we are willing to stop and look into things. Why? You know, why aren't I happy? Right? I mean, I was asking somebody that the other day, who was telling me about some drama they were in life and their relationships. I said, you know, do you ever want to be happy? Ever thought about being happy in life? I mean, isn't that an interesting question? You know what I mean? Like when you're having all this drama, are you happy? No. Have you ever had this drama before? Oh, yeah. And yet, if we asked ourselves, you know, if we have a moment of clarity, and if we said to ourselves, do I want to be a happy human being? Everybody would go, what? Yes. You know, you'd have to really be sick to go, no, I'm here to be miserable. And I'm, you know, and if you run into people like that, you should feel sorry for them, because they're telling you that's what they, their life has conditioned them to think that's what life's about. Right? But most of us, hopefully, have a little higher awareness of the capacity of life. And if we don't, when we run into these kinds of teachings, they are telling us that we have that capacity. Okay, but we have to be willing to stop. You know, if we're unhappy, if we're angry, if we're resentful, if we're frustrated, if we're down, if we're any of this stuff, why is that? What are the causes of that? If I'm anxious, if I'm scared, if I'm sad, despairing, you know, why is that? What's the cause of that? And if you think the cause is that person who did that to you, or your life situation that did that to me, you're absolutely wrong. That was quite a strong statement. You'd like it, can't I just be half wrong? No, absolutely wrong. Thoughts and feelings arise where? In our own mind. They don't arise anywhere else. So if we're happy or sad, if we're peaceful or agitated, it is going on in our own mind. Right? And what shapes our mind? Causes and conditions that are under my capacity to deal with. If I am mindful of them, if I investigate them, they do not have the power to harm me. But if I am not mindful and if I don't investigate, I will be harmed by life. The next factor of an awakened mind, and again, we can all be cultivating these things, you know, when they're completely our minds, then we're Buddhas, and we get to sit up here. But but until then, they need to be cultivated. So we cultivate mindfulness, we cultivate investigation of phenomena, and the third thing we cultivate is joy. Now that may sound strange, doesn't it? Cultivating joy. Many of us know how to cultivate misery, right? We're professionals at that. Well, think about it. How do you cultivate misery? How do you cultivate unhappiness? Because we engage in certain types of thinking, certain types of actions, right? And they create within us unease, unhappiness, heaviness, all those things, okay? Well, if we engage in a different set of activities, a different set of mind states, right, we will feel differently. Is that clear? So we learn in this practice to engage in life in a way that produces a sense of happiness. Again, and it's not the happiness, you know, when we get our way. Right? That's the kind of happiness most of us like. Oh, I'm happy these days. Things are going my way. Well, when you know when somebody's happy that way, you know that it's a fragile happiness. Why? Because things change. Because we can't control life and everybody. Right? And so, you know, it's going to go the other way. And then we're going to be unhappy. But there's a deeper kind of happiness that comes from the cultivation of mindfulness, that comes from the cultivation of the investigation of phenomena, that comes from altruistic living, positive living, generating compassion, loving kindness, equanimity, patience, you know. There's a whole other range of mind states. Acceptance, forgiveness, you know, understanding, all these things we know. When we are generating these types of mind states, we will feel what? Joy. Happy to be alive, right? If I get up today and I go, oh, shit. Not another day, I gotta, you know, I gotta deal with this one, and I gotta deal with that one, right? And we wonder why we're not happy, you know? Right? I mean, can you see there's a cause and effect relationship there? But if I wake up in the morning and I go, you know, how wonderful, I'm still alive. Another day, no matter however the yesterday was or my whole life has been, today I can do it differently. Right? Right? We said in the chant, what does it say? Today is a new day. Remember that? In the we begin our meditation. Today is a new day. I vow to go through it in mindfulness. I vow to generate understanding. Today's a great day. I can change. I can generate understanding. I can be compassionate. I can be helpful to human beings. Right? I can be helpful to myself. Right? What a wonderful opportunity I have today. That makes me happy. Right? We all have that capacity. Right? Even if everything else is going bad, you know, there's still a blue sky. A lot of, especially in Florida, we're quite lucky. There's a blue sky. It's sunny. There are flowers and trees. Even if human beings are all messed up today. You know, there are beautiful things, you know, and we can touch those things. Good things in life, good opportunities that we all have. So we need to generate that kind of mind that's appreciative, that's grateful. Thich Nhat Hanh says, if we are not grateful, we suffer. Very black and white statement. If we're not in a state of gratitude, we suffer. So we cultivate joy. The next one is wonderful. It's ease. Think about that, that's one of the factors of an awakened mind. It's at ease. The opposite of ease is what? Stressed, uptight. Anybody know that one? Agitated. Stressed out. That's the mind state of our age, right? And when we get together with other people, we have contests about who's more stressed out. So we get together with our friends and they tell us, colleagues, they tell us how stressed out they are by work and family and all that. And then we tell them about how stressed out we are. And we think that's a good conversation. Right? Stressed out, agitated is not normal. It's an abnormal mind state. It's a suffering mind state. The awakened mind, which means your mind, has the capacity to be at ease. Relaxed. Even if things are busy out there. All we can ever do is one thing at a time anyhow. Even those in here who think they're kings and queens of multitasking. You're still doing, in each moment, one thing. You haven't developed the capacity to do two things in one moment. At least not yet. I'm sure there's somebody working on it. As if the purpose of life is efficiency. There are many people who think the purpose of life is to become more and more efficient and more productive. That's the purpose of life. There may be people in here like that who believe that. You know, good day today. I did so much. I accomplished so much. So efficient and productive. Tomorrow I'm going to be even more so. Again, I am not saying that in certain ways to be a little more productive and efficient is not beneficial. But to take that as the purpose of life is crazy. The purpose of life is what? To be happy, to be loving and kind and have good, healthy relationships, to take care of our fellow human beings. Isn't that the purpose of life? I mean, isn't that what gives you happiness? You know, being more efficient and productive may make you more efficient and productive. It will not make you happy. Is that clear? Most people who are efficient and productive and are great at all that stuff are not happy people. They have to do other things. Drink, drugs, endless shopping, you know, obsessive relationship with sex. I mean, they have to do other things to create momentary sense of happiness. Obsessive involvement with pleasure seeking. Why is that? Because that kind of life doesn't produce happiness. It doesn't produce ease. You look at the animal realm, right? Most animals have a great capacity for ease. And even when they get very active, right? Running around food, or they're just very busy attacking each other or something. You know, eating each other. But that's really not the major part of their life. A lot of part of their life is what? What? Ease. They're just sitting there. You know, those National Geographics with the lions, you know, they're just, well, they're just sitting there, right? Looking around, scratching themselves. Right? You know? Once had a friend who had a dog, and I forget, he was homesick, and he realized his dog, who was so active when he was there, the whole day that he was gone, just laid around. And he could feel that him being home all day was a stressor to his dog. You know, like, can I just chill like I like to do all day? So that shows us there's something about the natural life where ease of body and mind is very, very human. But many of us have lost that capacity. And then the final two, and then we'll have to end, factor of mind is a mind that is concentrated. So concentration, samadhi, it means that our minds not only are mindful, which means just kind of the light is on, the mirror is reflecting, we can see things clearly, but the mind has the capability of concentrating, of kind of taking the energies of the mind and placing them wherever one wants and holding it there. That is a wonderful capacity of mind. It is something that we are doing in meditation, or in walking meditation, or in work meditation. You know, washing the dishes, just present to washing the dishes. Cooking, just cooking. The mind can be concentrated. When the mind is concentrated, there's a kind of calmness and peace and stability and sense of integration and wholeness that arises from a concentrated mind. So we are cultivating, learning how to concentration. That's the sixth factor. Mindfulness, investigation. Oh, I left out energy. I left out two. And we only have about 5 minutes. Okay. Diligence, or virya, energy. Enthusiasm, Right. We need to go about our life. You know, if you could imagine, like if you looked at your mind and you thought about where your mind hangs out all day, and if you looked at that and looked, how many of those are heavy mind states? How many of those are obsessive thinking mind states? How many of those are storytelling mind states? How many of those are just caught up in afflictive emotion mind states? How many of those are just randomly wasting time mind states? Right? If you could imagine all those are gone, would that free up a lot of energy? Oh, yeah. Energy for doing what you really want to do. You know. So many people talk about a lack of energy, but a lot of our lack of energy in life is because our mind is so involved again in mind states that rob us of energy. You know, they don't, short-term stress and anger, you know, feel good. A lot of people, when they're angry, they feel powerful, they're energized, right? But afterwards, they're drained. Anxiety drains, sadness, depression drains, obsessive rumination, endlessly going over the same story, drains. We have a word for it. What's it called? I'm emotionally drained. We even talk this way. Yeah, I'm just emotionally drained this week. Oh, okay. Stressed and emotionally drained. And we talk this way to each other. And nobody says, no, that's not healthy, that's sick. There's another way. So energetic, enthusiastic, these are normal aspects of an awakened mind because the energies of the mind are freed to live this way. And the final one is equanimity, okay? The equanimous mind. The mind of equanimity is the mind that is not up and down. It's even. Because we understand the way things are, because we've investigated phenomena, we understand that things are impermanent, we understand that things are just made up of parts, we understand that things just arise because of causes and conditions, we understand what this life is about, generating the factors of enlightenment, awakening, because we understand all these things, right? The mind is in a state of equanimity, it's in a state of balance, okay? So equanimity is this final fundamental characteristics of the awakened mind. Right? And you can see they relate. If the mind's in a state of equanimity and balance, it's a mind that's at ease. If the mind's in a state of equanimity and ease, it is much more common that there'll be a sense of well-being and happiness. They all interrelate to one another. So again, many of us may be sitting here raising the doubtful mind. Sounds good, not for me. Mm-mm. Everybody in here has that capacity, right? Just to do a little bit of each, just to generate a little bit of each, begins to change your life. That's what practice is, right? That's what walking a spiritual path is. We understand where we are. We have no illusions about where we are. We understand where we want to go. We have confidence in where we want to go, and we have confidence in our ability to do it. It's just a matter of what? Doing it. Every day, just doing it. When the first time you sit down to play the piano, can't play a thing. They give you the sheet music, don't understand it. Begin to play, mostly mistakes. Right? You could at that point what? Give up. It's too hard for me. But again, if you want to learn how to play, all you need to do is what? Practice. There's no mystical, there's no mystical state of grace that's going to descend on us. If you're waiting for that, you've got a long wait. Just through your own practice, you will heal and transform. Wherever we are in life, we got ourselves here ourselves, with the help of others. And we can get ourselves out of it with the help of others. That's what Sangha, that's what community, that's what teachers are for. So that, in a nutshell, is the the four mind turnings, the five hindrances, and the seven factors of enlightenment. Thank you.